are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again. It is another crossover Wednesday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. That means my guest will be the host of Locked On Falcons as we get ready for this week 15 matchup when the Atlanta Falcons travel to visit Levi's Stadium and the San Francisco 49ers. Aaron Freeman joining me today to break all of this down, doing a fantastic job over there at Locked On Falcons. You can find him at FalcFans, that's F-A-L-C-F-A-N-S on Twitter, and at Locked On Falcons. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. And of course, you can find both of our podcasts. You can find Locked On NFL, which I also co-host, all the shows here on the network, baseball, football, basketball. We have you covered. Your team has a show right here on the Locked On Podcast Network on all of your favorite podcast apps. Let's get this thing going.
Brian, my friend, these two teams between the Falcons and 49ers seem to be sort of polar opposites, where the 49ers are a team with their eye on the prize, hopefully wanting to play in February, and the Falcons are really sort of in this mode where they're just trying to win a couple of games to wind up ruining their draft position for a presumably another coaching staff. I'm curious, sort of looking at this Falcon team, where there are some links between the 49ers coaching staff and the Falcons coaching staff, and I'm sure that is going to be something that people in the media and several fans are going to be playing up this week. But how are you sort of approaching this game?
Yeah, this game is sort of the don't screw it up portion of the 49ers season with what they have had to face recently, starting with the Seahawks about 5 weeks ago, and then the last three matchups with the Packers, Ravens, and the Saints, which is basically a gauntlet that is being called now by pretty much everybody, a gauntlet of three games that really has been among the most difficult three-game stretches for any team in NFL history at this point in the season. So that's what the 49ers just went through, came out with a 2-1 record in those three games, are in very good position now at 11-2 in the NFC, still have the Seahawks in Seattle week 17 to finish up, but the Falcons and Rams are two teams that can still beat you, and so the 49ers have to not have a letdown in the next 2 weeks before they get to Seattle to try to finish this thing off. So that's where the 49ers are, and I think it kind of helps that there is that coaching connection and a little bit of a closeness between these teams to where it'll be less likely for the 49ers to have a letdown game against a team that is currently 4-9 in the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, really, if I'm being completely honest, and I know the Locked On Falcons listeners are going to like hearing this, or at least some of them won't, I think the Falcons' only hope really going into this game facing this 49ers team is if the 49ers are sort of looking ahead to next week against the Rams, or basically being like, oh, we've just beaten the Saints, we've beaten, you know, the Packers a couple of weeks ago. This Falcon team is a pushover, and to hopefully catch the Falcons sleeping, or at least the Falcons to catch the 49ers sleeping, as the Falcons presumably did a couple of weeks ago when they beat the Saints coming off of their bye week. Because I think when I look at these two teams, particularly this 49ers defense, I just don't see a lot of hope for this Falcon team to be able to put up enough points to really make this a competitive game against what is a high-flying 49ers offensive attack. And I think that took even a bigger hit with the Falcons losing Calvin Ridley for the remainder of the season. I know the 49ers are dealing with some injuries on their defensive side of the ball. Richard Sherman's expected to miss a couple of weeks. I know Dee Ford's sort of nicked up as well. I'm curious if you're expecting this 49er defense to maybe be a little bit more vulnerable with some of these injuries on that side of the ball.
Yeah, yes and no. I think I would take that trade from a 49ers perspective, just looking at this one matchup with the 49ers against the Falcons, if the Falcons don't have Ridley, because the 49ers have somehow found some gold in a backup cornerback by the name of Emmanuel Mosley, who was undrafted a couple of years ago, and he stepped in for Akella Witherspoon, who spent significant time out this year and played really, really well. And so the 49ers luckily have someone that can jump in there and play cornerback that I think everyone is really confident in now, even with Richard Sherman out. My question to you about that same matchup, and obviously there's still Julio Jones on the other side, and I mean, a lot of familiar names with that Falcons offense, but Sanu is gone. If you don't have Ridley, what is it looking like aside from the usual names and the usual suspects there on the Falcons offense?
Well, if anybody watched the highlight shows, they probably saw a relatively unknown receiver by the name of Olamide Zaccheaus get a 93-yard touchdown this past week against the Panthers.
I was going to let you say that name first. I wanted to hear you say it first. I didn't want to bring up that name without hearing you say it first.
Yeah. It was clever on your part, Brian, to sort of tease it there so I could get it out there. He scored on a 93-yard play. That was right after Ridley got hurt. So the expectation is he's going to get a large percentage of those snaps. They've had a guy like Christian Blake, who's a guy that they also promoted off the practice squad after the Sanu trade, and he's had some modest production the last couple of weeks, sort of as their number three guy, and fourth option behind Ridley and Julio Jones. And then Russell Gage has been a guy that's really sort of emerged in that Sanu role out of the slot receiver. And so the hope I think the Falcons have is that between the three of those guys, Gage, Blake, and Zaccheaus, that they can hopefully all combine to sort of fill some of that void left by Calvin Ridley. But if I'm being completely honest, outside of a handful of plays here and there, none of those guys have shown the type of consistency that I think Ridley can potentially bring, and that ability to create separation, not only on the underneath routes, but also on the vertical routes on a consistent basis. So I really do think if the Falcons are going to be able to adequately replace Ridley, it's going to have to rely very heavily on Julio Jones to sort of shoulder the burden. And I think one could hope that, you know, despite some of the positives from guys like Witherspoon and Mosley, as you mentioned, that Julio Jones can go out there and show the world why he's Julio Jones and why some of these guys are who they are, and maybe potentially get some big plays in this game and really have a monster game. Because I do think him and Austin Hooper are going to have to carry the passing game, because I just don't trust these young receivers quite yet to be able to make plays against this quality of a defense. And so, you know, we saw last week with Jared Cook having some success against the Saints early on in that game. So I'm hoping that maybe that translates to Hooper having some success this week. But I think really the problem the Falcons are going to have to deal with is this 49ers pass rush, which is not really going to give a lot of time for Matt Ryan to sort of sit back and be able to find some of these young weapons. And that could be an issue for this Falcons offensive line that has been very problematic this year. They've made some changes to the lineup this past week. They got their rookie and Chris Lindstrom back. It kind of paid off because they, after giving up, you know, 15 sacks in the two previous games, they only gave it one sack to the Panthers. But again, you're going up against a 49ers rush that is on a completely different level. Even without D Ford, you got playmakers like Bosa and Buckner. And I'm curious, you know, has anybody had any success stopping this 49ers pass rush this season?
I think the people who have had the most success stopping the pass rush, and I think last week against the Saints was the first time that we saw a team with a pocket passer slow down the rush. And it wasn't so much that they slowed down the rush. And if I'm the Falcons and I watched last week's game and watched the Saints put up 46 yards or 46 points on the 49ers defense, getting the ball out quickly. So it's not so much that you are beating their pass rush by blocking them. And they did a pretty good job up front, I think the Saints did, but get the ball out. Get the ball out to your tight end, attack the second level of the 49ers defense. They're banged up at linebacker without Quan Alexander. So it's Fred Warner and a couple of rookies out there at linebacker for the 49ers. And then Marcel Harris in there for Jaquaski Tartt, which hurt the 49ers early last week as well. So that would be the name of the game for me if I'm an offensive coordinator going up against the 49ers. Get the ball out early, nullify the rush that way, get it out to your tight ends, get it out to your wide receivers on really short breaking routes, and get it out to your running backs in the passing game. More crossover with Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers and Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons coming up. All right, this is a good time to tell the fellas out there about Blue Chew. Guys, do you remember when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. And they're made right in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On to try it free. Blue Chew is the cheaper, better, faster choice. We thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
We've broken down the formula for how the Falcons can at least try to be competitive against this 49ers defense, but I do think one of the more intriguing matchups in this game is going to be looking at this 49ers offense going against this struggling Falcons defense this year, and it's sort of a return to the very infamous Kyle Shanahan, not to Atlanta, but obviously facing this Falcon team for the first time since he became the 49ers head coach. And we'll sort of have to see what he can dial up against a Falcons defense that we talked about the injury to Calvin Ridley and how it could potentially impact the Falcons offense. But they also have a major injury on that defensive side of the ball in cornerback Desmond Trufant. Really, you know, I'm looking at this 49ers wide receiver core with guys like Deebo Samuel against guys like Emmanuel Sanders, who's really sort of uplifted this 49ers offense, at least from my observations, since he was made that midseason trade. I'm curious, sort of, what are your thoughts on this 49ers passing attack? Obviously, you have, you know, one of the best players in the league this season, and George Kittle made an amazing play at the end of that Saints game to basically essentially win the game for the 49ers at that point. But I'm curious, sort of what are you looking at with this wide receiver core, particularly in the weeks since Samuel Sanders was traded to the 49ers?
Yeah, right now the passing game for the 49ers is really hitting at the highest level it has this year. And I think there's multiple parts of that. One of them absolutely is the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, having that veteran player in there. And if you remember in the offseason, the 49ers were one of the teams going really hard at Odell Beckham. And maybe a blessing in disguise that Odell didn't end up in San Francisco because the 49ers were able to pay a lot less to get Emmanuel Sanders in. And he's given them that burst and that boost in the passing game and become the number one guy pretty much immediately with Jimmy Garoppolo and building that connection with him. And he's a perfect fit for what Kyle Shanahan likes to do. He's no Odell Beckham. He's no Julio Jones physically, but he can separate. He can get open. He has the purest of hands and he can give you something after the catch. He's still got, even though he's, you know, on the wrong side of 30 now, he's still got a lot of juice left in those legs. So he's been awesome for the 49ers. And then while he shows up, rookie Deebo Samuel has also been developing and going through your normal rookie learning curves. And he admitted his head was swimming earlier in the season and in training camp. And I think he's really coming into his own and has solidified himself as the starter next to Emmanuel Sanders. And then on top of that, Jimmy Garoppolo is just getting better himself, because even though he's in his late 20s now and he's been in the league for 5 years, he hasn't had a lot of game time reps, and he hasn't had a lot of reps under Kyle Shanahan because he came in late in 2017 and only got 3 games in 2018. So this is his first full offseason with full regular season that he's been able to get in Kyle Shanahan's offense, and you're seeing it every week. He's getting better and better and better. So right now the 49ers passing attack is actually hitting at the highest level that we've seen since Kyle Shanahan took over for the 49ers. I have actually a question for you on that same note with Kyle Shanahan, Aaron. And in the intro, you made it sound like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you expect Dan Quinn to get fired. is the major drop off for the Falcons since Shanahan left, does that have a lot to do with Kyle Shanahan in your mind? Like how much are Falcons fans missing Kyle Shanahan, or is it the defensive side of the ball that's really failed under Dan Quinn?
It's both, Brian. It's I think for this season in particular, really the reality was that the Falcons have never had a great defense. They've always had a below average defense in the Dan Quinn era, which is its own issues given, you know, one of the drawing points for hiring Dan Quinn was the expectation that he would build a good defense here. And that's been a major issue throughout this season. And they've been one of the worst defenses in the league. They made changes at the bye week to try to fix things, and it worked for a couple of weeks, and then they sort of reverted back, and you know, there's still question marks on that side of the ball. So the defense is obvious, but I think a big issue that the Falcons have been dealing with is the reality that when you go back to that Super Bowl year that is constantly in the back of the minds of Falcon fans and certainly a lot of people around the nation when they think of things like 28-3, is that Kyle Shanahan's play calling really masked the fact that the Falcons, outside of their offense, was a pretty middling football team, and that speaks to the defensive problems. And the reality has hit that when you sort of revert this, or this offense regresses to basically being an average unit, they're not that great a football team. And that was really kind of their issue last season in 2018. And what's been even bigger issue is that in 2019, under Dirk Koetter, their second offensive coordinator since Shanahan's departure, they've even become a worse offense. And now they're, you know, in the bottom 10 in a lot of statistical categories from an offensive standpoint. And when you couple that with a defense that is not very good and on top of that is struggling, you get sort of this combination of a Falcons football team that is currently, you know, 4-9 and potentially having a head coach fired at the end of the season.
You know, it's interesting when I think about the Falcons and Kyle Shanahan and what they looked like with Shanahan over there in Atlanta and Matt Ryan specifically, and what's going on with Jimmy Garoppolo's development. And just putting that together, I think it's a really good comparison because Matt Ryan was already a veteran quarterback when Kyle Shanahan showed up, as was Jimmy Garoppolo. But working with Kyle Shanahan, it took a while. And in year one under Shanahan, Matt Ryan was good, not great. Year two, he took off and had that historic season, and the Falcons made that Super Bowl run. And I'm wondering with, because, you know, it's messy with how much, due to reps, due to the injuries, due to the late season addition of Jimmy Garoppolo in 2017, the reps haven't quite worked out where it's year one is this, now year two, you get better. I'm wondering if we're seeing right now Jimmy Garoppolo sort of turning that corner and really hitting that point that Matt Ryan hit in year two under Shanahan. I wonder if it's getting close to that because, you know, starts wise, he is now kind of entering year two under Shanahan as a starter. So if that's the case for the 49ers, I think the sky might be the limit. And seeing Shanahan's offense in full display with more talented pieces and seeing it develop and seeing it in year three where everybody knows what's going on, it's amazing to see the difference in what this offense looks like when it's humming, and watching him versus Sean Payton last week and watching the haymakers and watching them both get so deep into their playbooks. It's been pretty awesome. And so I can imagine what it's like for a Falcons fan to go from where that juggernaut offense was to where things have sort of settled down to now in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there where, you know, I've seen a lot of people, and obviously I haven't been watching the 49ers as closely as you have and others have, but I've seen a lot of people make the comment with Jimmy Garoppolo's improved play over the last couple of weeks, because I think that was, at least from my perspective, a serious question about sort of where the ceiling is for this 49er team if they can't get more than just sort of average to above average play from him, which I thought was really the case earlier this season, where he was certainly not bad or anything, but he certainly wasn't doing a whole lot to elevate that offense. And so if he's sort of finding his stride in this offense, and we saw that, as you mentioned, sort of with the Falcons back in 2016, and they really got hot in the second half of that season and basically rode that offense all the way to the Super Bowl. And you couple that with what is a legitimate 49er defense, unlike what the Falcons had back then, even though they did play well down the stretch, You know, this is a team that, you know, the sky is the limit for sort of the potential that they could do in the postseason. But, you know, we're talking about these sort of Falcon 49er connections, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about sort of the many connections from a personnel standpoint, not just from a coaching standpoint, that you have with the 49ers, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, where there are several former Falcons playing on the team. You have guys like Ben Garland and Mike Person, Daniel Brunskill, Levine Toilolo, and Tevin Coleman. Coleman and Garland were sort of fan favorites here in Atlanta, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on those guys. Brunskill was another guy that I was very high on when he was on the Falcons practice squad for a couple of years, and I liked his potential. I'm curious to get your thoughts on sort of how some of these former Falcons have played and performed for the 49ers this season.
Yeah, well, one big one now is Ben Garland, because he played well in the preseason and in camp, and now he's getting thrust in there because Weston Ridgeburg has officially gone on to IR. He is done for the year. He's got a torn patellar tendon, so it's Ben Garland's show at center the rest of the way, so that's going to be an interesting one, and I've liked what I've seen. I don't think he's quite the high-level athlete that Weston Richburg was, which is what Shanahan really likes with those athletic centers, but I think the 49ers are going to be okay with Ben Garland in there, and we'll see what that looks like going forward. But Daniel Brunskill has been unbelievable. He's almost been what Emmanuel Mosley has been on defense at corner. That's what Brunskill has been on the offensive line. And he filled in at right tackle to begin when Mike McGlinchey went out, and then was actually playing better than Justin School, the rookie sixth rounder. So he jumped over and played left tackle once McGlinchey came back with Staley still out. Now they're both back, so Brunskill's back on the bench, but I have a feeling that he's going to jump in there and be the main backup at maybe all five offensive line spots right now. And I'm blown away that the Atlanta Falcons let him get away with how bad offensive lines are throughout the league, because he's been a really good player. And actually, according to Pro Football Focus, after George Kittle, who's been the highest rated player period this season for PFF grading, Daniel Brunskill is the second highest graded player on the 49ers offense right now. So that's been pretty wild. And Tevin Coleman is another one that's interesting to me, because, and maybe you could speak on this a little bit, I've been not really too impressed. He had one really good game against the Carolina Panthers, but his running style, and basically he's the third, maybe best running back currently on the 49ers behind two undrafted players. And I know Shanahan drafted him in Atlanta and really likes him, and he can give you something in the passing game, and he's got that top speed, but something's missing there vision-wise. And I maybe expected a little bit more out of Tevin Coleman, just because he was Shanahan's guy and he wanted to bring him in from Atlanta so bad. What did Coleman look like to you in Atlanta? And does that surprise you that he's averaging only 3.5 yards per carry, but the guys in front of him are averaging 5.5 and 6 yards per carry?
No, that was kind of the book on Tevin Coleman here in Atlanta. He was sort of up and down, you know, that explosive speed, you would see it flash, but you just didn't see the consistency as a runner, that efficiency as a runner. And it largely was due to issues with vision. It was due to issues with balance. He was so fast and so explosive that he would sort of come out, you know, like a rocket when he would get the handoff, and he would lose his footing and fall down far too often here in Atlanta. And so that was one of the issues with Coleman. You know, overall, when you considered the positives that he brought, that explosive speed, that ability to create mismatches, particularly in the passing game, you were able to forgive some of the inconsistency as a runner, particularly when Devontae Freeman was healthy, because he was much more of that consistent, efficient running back. So you could sort of offset some of those issues with Coleman and get that value as a pass catcher. And I think, you know, again, obviously the 49ers are having a lot more success with their other running backs. And, you know, again, I'm not a close observer of sort of what their offense looks like, but I imagine, like, you still have that fallback option, that sort of the things that he could do as a pass catcher can sort of offset some of his limitations as a running back.
More matchups and X factors coming up. And of course, we've got to get to our predictions on this Wednesday Falcons 49ers crossover. Long day at work, still stuck at the office? Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. As I mentioned earlier, I think one of the X factors in this game, and I think it can work both ways, is because obviously George Kittle is such a good player and maybe the most important player on the 49ers team with his ability both as a run blocker and as a pass catcher. I have to imagine this has been what the 49ers have tried to do against most teams, is attack the middle of the field. So what is the answer from the Falcons defense against George Kittle and those linebackers taking on both the outside zone run game from the 49ers and George Kittle?
I don't know the answer to that question, Brian. It's been one of the things where their tight end eracer was Keanu Neal, and he obviously got hurt earlier this season, suffered a torn Achilles. And they've really struggled the last couple of weeks covering tight ends because they've been relying a lot on free safety Ricardo Allen, who sort of has slid into Neal's vacated spot the last couple of weeks after they sort of went through several weeks of Kamal Ishmael and Jamal Carter and Jonathan Cyprian, and none of those guys proved to be the answer, and it led to a lot of errors and mistakes and problems for the Falcons defense in the first half of the season. But Allen is kind of a guy that tends to get overmatched in terms of that man coverage ability against those bigger, more athletic tight ends. That's not going to be the solution to cover Kittle. Your only hope is that a player like Devondre Campbell, who did some positive things this past week against Carolina when he was matched up with Ian Thomas, you hope that he can sort of play basically the best football game he's ever played and being able to keep George Kittle in check. But typically Campbell struggles against those athletic tight ends like Kittle that are so good at changing direction. Campbell's got good length, good speed, but he's more of a straight line guy. So, you know, when you sort of have those routes that can break left, break right, those are the times where you can create easy separation, because Kittle is such a dynamic runner after the catch that can create problems. So I really think the Falcons don't really have an answer for George Kittle. I think their only hope, their saving grace, is that Grady Jarrett and their pass rush can just basically, maybe because of their familiarity with guys like Mike Person and Ben Garland, maybe can expose those guys a little bit and maybe force Jimmy Garoppolo to not be able to find his favorite target. That's really the only thing. I think Shanahan's success scheming and the weapons that the 49ers have is just going to pick apart this Falcons defense that has been really struggling. The only times this defense has looked competent is when they can get their pass rush going this season, and that's just been inconsistent throughout this year. And so that's really, you know, the hope is that Grady Jarrett plays the game of his life, Adrian Claiborne plays the game of his life, that sort of thing, because they don't really have an answer for George Kittle.
Aaron, we do have to make some predictions here. Do you have any other X factors in this game that you think could be a difference-making matchup?
My hope is that the Falcons offensive line, given the changes and the shuffling that they did in the past week with the introduction, the reintroduction of Chris Lindstrom, with the uptick in play for guys like Caleb McGarry, I think they're going to have to rely on the running game to sort of slow down this pass rush. And my hope is that the sort of season high that they had against Carolina isn't simply a result of playing the Panthers, who were the worst run defense in the league, or at least one of the worst run defenses in the league this season. And my hope is that this offensive line is legit and that they can sort of keep this 49ers defense from pinning their ears back, because if the Falcons get into a shootout with this 49er team, it's going to be a problem. So they're going to have to play a ball control type of style of game, hope that they can limit the possessions for this 49ers offense, hope that they can run the ball effectively and be able to move the ball, and just kind of hope that they can get some splash plays, get some mistakes from the 49ers, maybe get a couple of positive plays on special teams. They got a forced fumble last week. They got a punt return for a touchdown a couple of weeks ago. So they kind of need a boost from their special teams to really sort of equalize it, because simply looking at it from a Falcons offense, Falcons defense standpoint going up against this 49er team is certainly weighed heavily in the favor of the 49ers. So I think if the Falcons special teams doesn't come out and play a really monster game, then they really have no shot. And that sort of leads me into my prediction. I think this is going to be a little bit of a blowout. I hope I'm wrong on this one, but I do think this is going to be a little bit of a somewhat embarrassing loss for the Falcons, not unexpected, given where these two teams are at. So I'm going to have the 49ers winning this one 41-17.
Yeah, and it looks like the MyBookie line here, Vegas agrees with you. They have the over-under at 47.5. I think I might even go over on that one. I think there can be some points scored in this game, even if it is a little bit one-sided. And they have the 49ers favored by 11, which is a lot of points to give. Obviously, I think straight up, the smart money's on the 49ers. Giving up 11 points is much more difficult. That's a lot of points in the NFL week to week, but I think I might even give up those points too because I think the 49ers can take home a double-digit victory here against the Falcons, and I think this game has an opportunity to look a lot more like when the Packers were in Levi's Stadium last, and the 49ers pass rush and the 49ers defense just really did a number on Aaron Rodgers and that Packers offense, and I think that might be a similar stylistic matchup here with the 49ers against the Falcons Sunday. And maybe if it's enough of a whooping for the 49ers, if it does go that way, who knows? Maybe Arthur Blank will sit back and say, you know what? Maybe we let the wrong coach go. Seen Kyle Shanahan do that to his Falcons. And who knows? Maybe it's the last game in Dan Quinn's coaching career for the Atlanta Falcons.
That is definitely a possibility. And Brian, I do appreciate you joining me on today's Crossover Wednesday episode. We'll sort of have to see where this 49er team is a month or so from now, as they're obviously, you know, competing for that ultimate hardware at the end of the season. But maybe the Falcons can do something to play a little bit of a spoiler and maybe wind up costing them a seeding spot. But I think given that the 49ers are competing with the Saints for a top seed, I don't know. Maybe it's in the Falcons' best interest from a rivalry standpoint to actually blow this game against the 49ers to assure to increase the possibility that the Saints don't get a home game at the end of the season. But obviously, you know, we're talking about playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers. So we'll sort of see what the Falcons wind up doing. But again, Brian, I do appreciate you joining me today, and let the Locked On Falcons listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and what sort of things that you got going for you, not only at Locked On 49ers, but also Locked On NFL.
Yeah, Aaron. And by the way, the Falcons do have a team that can go into New Orleans and beat a team like the Saints, as the 49ers just saw. That's a very good football team over there. So it's not a game that's an impossible win for the Falcons. They've shown that they were able to go on the road and win a big game and beat a good football team. So that is definitely not out of the question, even though we both picked the 49ers to win this one. The listeners out there can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. I host Locked On 49ers, obviously, but I also host Locked On NFL. We go around the league trying to cover every team daily, just like all the shows here on the Locked On Podcast Network. My co-host, former NFL scout, former ESPN guy, Matt Williamson. So we do it daily on Locked On NFL, so you should check that out as well on all of your favorite podcast apps. And Aaron, where can my listeners find you?
I'm at FalcFans on Twitter. That's I can't even spell my own Twitter handle. FalcFans. And of course, you can find me daily on the Locked On Falcons podcast here, talking all things Falcons, starting to look ahead to 2020. And we'll sort of see what happens with this Falcon season and their coaching staff at the end of the year. So that's the topics of conversation here on the Locked On Falcons podcast. But again, Brian, appreciate you joining me for Crossover Wednesday. Looking forward to the great content that you're going to provide on both of those podcasts. I'm sure you got many more podcasts to do for this 49er team in this 2019 season and into the 2020 postseason.
Absolutely. A pleasure, Aaron, talking with you, and good luck in the offseason. I mean, I know what it's been like with the covering a team that was looking more forward to the offseason than the regular season. That is kind of flipped. So good luck and have some fun. Hopefully you find some gems in the draft. And I'll be back tomorrow right here, Locked On 49ers, with my good buddy Nick Winkler, another weekly wink. Talk to you then.